You know, I'm really looking forward to this debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz, the running mate for Kamala Harris. I think this is going to be fun. And I think it's going to be lively. And I think we're going to know a whole lot more about each one of these guys after this debate tonight.
Do you think more viewers, sorry, Phil, more viewers than what we were anticipating with the presidential debate?
No, you won't have more than you would for Kamala Trump. But I think that there's a curiosity factor at work. I think Americans are being drawn into this election. You can feel that people are starting to get more interested and starting to pay more attention.
Do you think it moves the needle on any of the swing states?
I think it very well could.
Okay.
Yeah, it very well could.
How about young voters? Are they tuning in tonight? Are they like, let me see what mom and dad are really all about here, because they're kind of different of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think this is an election where people are actually seeing a night and day difference between the direction the country will go in and they want to know which path to walk. So, yeah, I think there's going to be growing interest from voters across the board. I think they're going to get a pretty good audience tonight. I'm going to be watching. I know that much.
What about the moderators?
Well, Nora
good question.
Are they going to play fair, or are they going to gang up like we saw a little bit in the ABC one, or somewhere in the middle?
You've got two models to go from so far.
Yeah.
You had two liberals on CNN who were moderators. Yeah. Okay, they were moderating the debate between the two candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. They were doing their job, in other words.
Okay.
And we all saw what happened. In the second debate, the moderators were participants.
Yeah.
They were actively trying to support one candidate. That came through very clearly. Right. I'm so glad David Muir's ratings. Yeah,
trying to police one candidate.
After this. And there was significant blowback from that. So I'm going to guess that CBS is going to be halfway in between. But I'll tell you this much. I think that if they do get partisan, if they do start taking sides, I think J.D. Vance is just going to go right down their throat. Yeah. I think he's feisty, and he's
kind of got that personality and personal makeup that would speak out in that situation.
He's not going to just, I'll rise above it. No, I think that he's going to make it very clear, hey, I know what you're doing here, and don't think the American people don't know as well. I mean, I think he will be. That's one of the things that Donald Trump actually didn't do during the debate. He didn't complain to the moderators about how they were doing their job, about how, you know, you're fact-checking me. Yeah. You're not fact-checking my opponent.
Yeah. Are you doing this consciously or subconsciously?
So I think J.D. Vance is going to be far more aggressive on this. Anyway.
Well, only three things allowed on the podium tonight for this vice presidential debate. A pen, paper, and water. Can we do a radio show like that, Sean? Could you do it on a pen, paper, and water? We'll find out.
And a computer. and a senior chief executive producer. And a radio legend board op, then yeah. Other than that, it's just like
a big debate.
All I need besides all that is a pen and a paper. Okay, boy, do we have a lot of things we got to talk about. Arguably the best hitter in baseball of the last 50 years, Pete Rose, dead at the age of 83. A legendary career, but a cautionary story about what happens when you fall in with the wrong people and start doing the wrong things. Jimmy Carter turns 100 years of age today. A couple of thoughts that I have about Jimmy Carter that I think will surprise some of our KVI listeners. This story, Justin, I love this story. A growing number of bosses are firing Gen Z grads from, you know, college who go to work for them. They're increasingly willing to fire them, and you'll hear why a little later on the John Carlson Show. And then a story that I wanted to get to yesterday, was not able to, but we're going to be talking about it at 6:35. The editor of Mother Jones magazine, left-wing magazine in America, very upset. She was offended by what a flight attendant said to her on a flight the other night, over the weekend. The offensive comment made by the flight attendant to this uber-liberal editor. Have a blessed day. This has set off the editor of Mother Jones magazine. And again, I've just... One more thing about the American left. Everything about them is political. Everything in life is political. And saying, have a blessed day, was a sign to her of the creeping influence of Christian nationalism in the United States today. So we'll get into that and how Alaska Airlines has responded to it. Before we get there, though, boy, I hope your prayers and thoughts are with the people of the Southeast as more and more stories and higher body counts come in from the hurricane and tropical storm Helene, particularly in North Carolina. One story, I'm going to tell you one story that really drives it home. And by the way, if you are from this part of the country, if you have lived in this part of the country, particularly in Western North Carolina, we would love to hear from you. You could call us or you could just text your impressions and your reactions to what's happening back there at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757.
John, they're saying right now 40 trillion gallons of rain in Helene alone. That would fill the Dallas Cowboys Stadium 51,000 times.
51,000 times. How many trillion gallons?
40 trillion gallons of rain drenched the southeast United States during the hurricane.
Yeah. And entire, yesterday we talked about how entire towns are being flooded underwater. Now, entire towns are washed away. And there's one particularly excruciating story. This happened in Marshall, North Carolina. The French Broad River jumped its banks and washed away an entire neighborhood. This happened in a town of about 800 people that has been more or less just wiped off the map by Tropical Storm Helene. Local residents said they'd never seen the river rise so quickly or so high or become so violent. Just ripped through the town, overturned a railroad car. Quote, everything's done, said Mallory McCoy, the owner of Mal's Bar. They said, we weren't ready for this much water. Well, there was a guy who lived in a mobile home. And he walked out. He was known for his red pickup truck. His name was Bruce Tipton, Navy veteran, always wore suspenders, 75 years old, kind of irascible. And they were told that you should think of leaving the area because the storm was approaching, but Bruce Tipton's trailer house had weathered previous storms, and he said, "Nah, I'm gonna stay. You know, just gonna stay here and weather the storm." Well, he walks out in the front door, and the minute, 1 second later, boom, everything's gone. One of his nieces saw it happen. She said it kind of exploded. And he just disappeared. And then they heard his voice. There was a shout from behind a tree in the water. He's yelling, "Help!" And people said, "Oh my goodness, Bruce is still with us. He's out there yelling. You could barely hear him, but he's waving his arms and you could kind of see him." So he's clinging to a tree, surrounded by all this floodwater. And he was only about 50 yards from shore. But the current of the river was so fierce that all people could do was look and wave and try and get him some help. They had trouble seeing him, but they could hear him yelling for help. Quote, "I'm not going to tell you I'm going to have nightmares about it, but why wouldn't I?" said Scott Eastman, a longtime neighbor who was among the people shouting from the riverbank. To hear someone yelling help for hours and not be able to get it to him, it's just sickening to me. So Bruce Tipton was yelling for help while clinging to this tree in the middle of this raging river, and they couldn't get to him. The houses on the riverbank were flooding. One fellow tied a cable around his waist and got up on the roof of a nearby house to see if he could reach him. The cable was too short, wasn't able to get out there. Hour after hour passed, and Bruce Tipton continued pleading for help, and relatives were calling out, "Liz, we've got your dog. We're doing the best we can. We've called 911. Finally, after several hours, a group of firefighters arrived, including the county's only river rescue team. They said the water was too dangerous. He's going to have to wait it out until morning. Quote, "When they told me they wouldn't put boats in the water, I lost it," said one neighbor. An assistant chief of the volunteer fire department and the leader of that river rescue team said the water was simply too turbulent for his squad because they don't have the powerful equipment that teams in larger regions have. All they have are inflatable boats. None of the boats has a motor. Quote, "The resources we have are for normal conditions. This is nothing that any of us have ever seen before." So they said, "We'll be back at daybreak." Mr. Tipton didn't make it. All they could do is watch. They had the headlights of the car showing the tree in the middle of the river where he was clinging to branches and was still yelling for help, but stopped yelling for help quite so often. And at 10:51 in the evening, His body went limp. He fell headfirst in the water, carried him out of sight. For 7.5 hours, this guy was crying for help. They weren't able to get to him. He survived by a daughter, his nieces, and nephew. Over 130 people have perished at least. They expect there'll be many more because so many people are unaccounted for. But that gives you an idea of just how stunned the people of North Carolina have been by the ferocity of this tropical storm. And not just, of course, North Carolina. It's happening in Georgia. It's happening in Tennessee. It's happening in Florida. It's just awful. The loss of not only human life, but entire cities and towns that are just gone.
Yeah, the communications are out. Water systems are completely destroyed.
Yeah.
Where do you even start?
So we will get you a number you can call in to help. We want to publicize the Salvation Army at a time like this. They're always there on the ground helping people, doing what they can.
And sadly, careful of the scams, everybody.
That's why I'm going to direct people to one place, the Salvation Army, because you're right, there's a lot of scams out there. It is 20 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yeah, lots of other, you know, Samaritan's Purse is on the ground. That's the Billy Graham, Franklin Graham charity. The Red Cross, of course, out there as well with the Salvation Army. 570 KVI, Philip J. Vandewaard III standing by with the morning's first social media sweep. What's happening out there?
I want to start with the You Couldn't Make This Up If You Actually Tried file. And the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. You have been talking in great detail about the confrontation between Israel and Hezbollah now in Lebanon, southern Lebanon. And one of the social media handles I follow is called In Defense of Communism. And the profile on the account says, Twitter account of In Defense of Communism, Marxist-Leninist. And that gives their website. But they posted to all of their followers that the 24th International Meeting of Communist and Workers' Parties, which was scheduled to take place in Beirut, Lebanon on October 24th through 27th, has been postponed until further notice due to the situation in Lebanon. So
I hear there's been a little kerfuffle there in Beirut.
So hopefully they're able to get that event reestablished.
Plus half their featured speakers got eliminated here.
Like I said,
a little bit of Hezbollah pruning, courtesy of the Israeli Defense Forces.
Couldn't make that story up if you tried. Here's an agree-disagree, and
just
it comes by way
make
of...
Make sure they update the situation with their pagers, all right?
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they don't notify everybody of future developments by pager. Now, here's an agree or disagree involving a post by Elon Musk, the guy who owns X/Twitter. And he wrote this, mind-blowing that the Democratic Party is massively outspending the Republican Party in swing states, and I guess he means for the presidential election. And he writes, the Democrats have become the party of the rich and entitled, just look at their donor list, and the Republicans have become the party of the people.
True.
John, agree or disagree?
True, completely
yeah?
true.
Okay.
Completely true.
It is a notable shift, isn't it?
It started with Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
I used to say that Reagan was the candidate of the Rotary Club, not the round table.
Okay.
Not the business round table. And it has continued. Donald Trump is hitting the pedal to the metal. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I know some wealthy people who really like Trump, and I know some wealthy people who loathe him.
All right. And then this one is kind of your feel-good story of the morning. It comes by way of the pollster Frank Luntz.
Mm-hmm.
And he posted that while you see many university students are burning an American flag, vandalizing property, acting like idiots, and I think he's loosely kind of tying all this to some of the pro-Palestinian campus protests. He writes, more than 1,500 West Point United States Army cadets ran from the Brooklyn Tunnel to the September 11th Memorial at the Trade Centers to pay tribute to the fallen. Now, I've got a little bit of those cadets as they're running through the tunnel. They decided to start singing the national anthem. So you were talking about Gen Z, is it? Or is it millennials? Gen Z. It was Gen Z graduates that are having trouble with their jobs and the employers that are having trouble with the Gen Z job candidates.
Well, not these guys.
Not those guys. Okay.
Again, that's
you
very
say
cool.
They're from, you
that
say
nice.
They're from West Point?
That was, yeah, West Point. Right up the river in New York.
Still America's best. Ray, you're right. Right up the Hudson River. That's a. Again, that's a nice reminder that Gen Z is about a whole lot more than, you know, spoiled, introverted, socially awkward people who are spoiled. Gen Z is also what you just heard, that great West Point class. All right, it is 6:30, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, when we come back, the oppressed editor of Mother Jones Magazine, so offended that an Alaska Airlines flight attendant wished her a blessed day. And also, Dana Carvey makes a return to Saturday Night Live as Joe Biden in their inaugural, they begin their 50th season. At Saturday Night Live, Dana Carvey plays Joe Biden. You've got to hear this. So I give you information. If you want to help these poor people who are just being inundated in the Southeast, particularly in North Carolina, I'm going to recommend you go to the Salvation Army. I'm going to give you a website. I'm going to give you a phone number. Again, they have a special website set up to help. That website is give.helpsalvationarmy.org. Again, give.helpsalvationarmy.org. And that is their website to support Hurricane Helene relief. They are helping with emergency aid. They are helping with food and water, refreshments. They are helping with spiritual care. Very helpful at a time like this. Critical supplies for survivors and supplies for rescue workers. This is a five-state. We're hearing a lot about North Carolina. That's where much of the damage is concentrated. But there are actually people hurting in five states. So if you would like to help, again, just go online to give.helpsalvationarmy.org. Okay, now for that phone number, 1-800 number, 1-800-SAL-ARMY, 1-800-SAL-ARMY. So again, that's 1-800-SAL-ARMY. All right, your help would be very much appreciated. A lot of people sure could use it right now. All right, the editor-in-chief of Mother Jones Magazine was on an Alaska Airlines flight to San Francisco. And she went out of her way to tweet out, post a Twitter message on Twitter or X, as it's now called, expressing her dismay about a comment made by an Alaska Airlines flight attendant. I will read you her tweet. So no one can accuse me of taking it out of context or just reading part of it. This is what she said. Creeping Christian nationalism alert. At Alaska Air, flight attendant just wished us a blessed night as we landed in San Francisco. To groans. I'm guessing the only people groaning were her and her friend sitting next to her, but again. Creeping Christian nationalism alert. Flight attendant, Alaska Air flight attendant, just wished us a blessed night as we landed in San Francisco to groans. Other adjectives that would have sufficed. Have a great evening. Awesome evening. Fabulous evening. Amazing. Fantastic. As my roommate said, this ain't Montgomery, sweetie. What did Alaska Airlines do in response? I just love this. Do you know how they responded? They just untagged themselves from the story. In other words, we don't think what you're saying is even worth a response, and we don't think we really care what your next thoughts are. They untagged themselves. Oh, I love Alaska Airlines. But that was her entire complaint. That is her entire complaint. So good for Alaska Airlines not allowing them to get sucked into someone who's definitely trying to make this a big deal.
Any different, unusual greeting, farewell you've ever recall in life that was like, wow, that was kind of different,
cool. Have a great evening, have a wonderful time, have a blessed evening, et cetera, et cetera. But again, what have I told you about the political left, particularly the secular left? Everything in their life is political. Everything in their life is political. What you serve for dinner is a political statement. What you're wearing is a political statement. Definitely the car you drive, or if you drive, is a political statement. And now, even how you welcome people or express thanks for someone flying with Alaska, even that has become a political statement. And Alaska Airlines, instead of, we certainly are sorry, we would never want to give offense. No, they just said, untag ourselves. What I love is she is getting a lot of response on Twitter. It is overwhelmingly negative. Andrew Kaczynski from CNN, quote, seems like the flight attendant was just being polite. Jonah Goldberg from the Dispatch. This is a bizarre, pretty indefensible overreaction. Dave Rubin, who does the Rubin Report, responding to the editor from Mother Jones. You're a deeply unpleasant weirdo. I hope that suffices. David Weigel, Washington Post, liberal guy. She sounds like a nice person, to be honest, meaning the flight attendant. Glenn Greenwald, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Referring to the tweet, put it in the encyclopedia under, quote, affluent white coastal American liberalism, close quote, and no other text will be required. Frank Luntz, the pollster, responding to Clara Jeffrey, the Mother Jones editor. Do you get alarmed if people say bless you after you sneeze?
Perfect example.
And the response back from Clara Jeffrey, It's a matter of respect for the audience before you, respecting their space and norms and wishes. Dominant cultures always feel they have a right to enforce their norms and intent. This is way off Alaska Airlines brand. Best sarcastic reaction came from Mary Catherine Hamm, the cable news commentator. I'm sorry this happened to you. Your reaction is very normal and healthy, and the flight attendant was definitely intent on oppressing you with her faith. Jessica O'Donnell responded to the editor of Mother Jones, you have issues greater than a flight attendant's well wishes. Several other people weighing in with, what do you say to a person when they sneeze around you? Kyle Mann, I believe from National Review. Bless your heart.
You are so good looking. That's a Seinfeld reference there.
Yes. And then finally, someone who I don't know goes by the handle Mary Spicer Ginger said, do you know how my religion-hating, diehard atheist father responds to someone saying blessed to him? He says, thank you. Because he's a normal and stable human being. Seek help, lady!
Keyword being stable.
Oh, that's nice. It is coming up here on 647, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Around the corner, we've got that wonderful, incomparable Dana Carvey, who used to do imitations of George H.W. Bush.
Good reminder.
And Ross Perot, if you remember that.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Now he's doing, it's 30 years later, he's doing Joe Biden. And you got to hear it to believe it. It's better. Dana Carvey's Joe Biden is better than Joe Biden's Joe Biden.
Also.
Okay, you're setting, the, you're setting it high on us here.
It's 647. Lars Larson, our noon to three host, right around the corner as the commute with Carlson continues again. If you want to help the victims of Hurricane Helene, go online to the Salvation Army. Give.helpsalvationarmy.org. Again, give.helpsalvationarmy.org. Get some, if Lars Larson can tell us the theme, the TV show that this is a theme to.
It's the Jetsons, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Told us how we'd live in the future. They didn't mention, though, green energy and limitations and you can't have the car you want and all that. But they did envision a push-button society.
Yes, so. They did. They weren't so bad.
Didn't Mr. Jetson come home from work every day talking about how he'd been slaving over a hot keyboard all day, which was funny at the time because most people who worked a physical job were, you know, slaving over a skill saw or slaving yes. over a lathe at, you know, making parts at Boeing back when Boeing used to make airplanes. Are they making airplanes anymore?
Oh, yeah. This, maybe they'll be making a few more once the strike ends.
Yeah, once it ends.
But they still had bosses like Mr. Spacely Sprockets.
You guys have got great memory.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Little bald guy with a fringe of
That's
hair
it.
On the edge.
There you go. Back in the past. All right.
See, this is how old we are. Did you note that they've arrested a teenager, a 17-year-old, so he's a few months from being an adult, for a shooting that injured a student? And again, they're not releasing the name of the of this person to the community, which I take exception to that.
Shooting at Kent Ridge High?
Yeah. And okay. That I believe that's the one. Near a high school, and you say, don't the other parents in that community have a right to know who the suspect is? If that person works a job, many teenagers do. If that person comes over to your house, if that person associates with your kids, now maybe within the school community, it's a secret that's not really a secret. But I really resent the idea that law enforcement won't tell us who this person is. And I've been giving the example of this guy from Volusia County, Sheriff Chitwood, who finally had it up to here with school threats, just threats. He had recently arrested an 11-year-old kid And he said, from now on, that kid's full name and picture goes on social media. This is the person we have charged with this crime. Now, they have a right to go to court and contest the charges and all that. And the state has to prove the charges. But the point is that in the meantime, the community knows who this person is.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I should point out, there's no confirmation at all about any shooting. This was last week where a lot of families pulled their kids out of school early last Thursday after an arrest was made at the school of a Kentwood High student.
Okay, John, let me correct what I said. I agreed with you, and
I
shouldn't have. This is Lincoln High School yesterday.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
It was Tacoma police that arrested a 17-year-old, and another teen was injured. They didn't say wounded or they just said injured. He's in stable condition, 16. And, of course, they're not releasing the name. And the school, Tacoma Public Schools, went into lockdown after reports of gunfire near the school, Lincoln High School. And there's video of residents at a nearby complex yelling, "He's got a gun," and then shots are fired.
All right.
Yeah. So why doesn't the community know who this person is? Because do you think there's any doubt he'll be out of custody soon?
Yeah. No, this happened about 500 feet from Lincoln High. And the answer is, I believe, yes. I believe that there are exceptions to the, oh, we don't publicize names or show pictures. If it's something like this, then yes. I think people have a right to know. Parents have a right to know. Lars Larson, every day of the work week from noon to 3, hour number 2 of the commute stream. It is 7:04 in the morning of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for joining me this Tuesday morning. First day of October, or as they used to say at the radio music station that Mark Christopher worked at.
Do you remember?
Rocktober.
Good for you. Nobody uses that fun slang anymore. Oh, well. We do here. Yeah. Way to go, John.
It came and went. Anyway, if you would like to help people in one of five states, particularly North Carolina, that have been rocked in a very bad way by Hurricane Helene, you can go online to give.helpsalvationarmy.org. There are a lot of great organizations that are on the ground right now doing superb work. The Red Cross is out there. Samaritan's Purse is out there. I'm just going to focus on one place with a great track record that is already there, helping out in five separate states. That's the Salvation Army. All they do is good. And, you know, all the money that you give goes directly into helping people who are there right now, doing work right now. And they're helping with, you know, the most basic things, food, crates of water, spiritual and emotional care, supplies, clothing, places to stay. That is what the Salvation Army does at a time like this. So, again, on that website, give.helpsalvationarmy.org. If you want to call them, it's 1-800-725-ARMY or 1-800-SAL, S-A-L, ARMY, 1-800-SAL-ARMY. And the donation you gave is not only very graciously accepted, it is also tax deductible. So there's some good news. All right.
Can we do a quick recap to explain the Lars segment? Lars started talking about a story of a juvenile that was arrested in Tacoma related to a shooting at Lincoln High School, a very near Lincoln High School.
Yeah.
And he started to go into the story, and I thought he was going into a different school juvenile arrest story, because there's one out of Kentridge High School,
right,
where a student was arrested. But in that story, there's been no information from law enforcement about what that student was arrested for, but
right,
the student was arrested at school. And then there's another story of a juvenile, but a younger age, a 13-year-old student, seems to be a middle school age student on Queen Anne, and that 13-year-old boy was arrested and then mistakenly released from juvenile detention after being arrested for robbery at knife point of a 12-year-old boy.
Wow.
So
Clare Junior High.
Lars went into the story about a Tacoma case, and for some reason, the details he was giving, I thought he was referencing the Kent Ridge case. He was not. But then to make sure that everyone knows, these are three of the stories that are in the news cycle for the last few hours. And this morning, there is this third case of a juvenile that was inadvertently released, mistakenly released. But it sounds like they are going to have to figure out if they're going to charge this 13-year-old on Queen Anne in Seattle by tomorrow. So
if,
three cases.
If they're going to charge someone
day,
who
basically.
Armed robbery at knife point.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, it's important that we keep our juvenile felonies straight.
Yeah, juvenile crime stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, track of them.
And, of course, the fact that there's been a proliferation of these stories, particularly in King and Pierce County, but most particularly in King County, following their vaunted experiment with juvenile diversion instead of consequences, no, counseling. Instead of being charged, you will be encouraged to meet with people in the community to talk through what you're doing. All this has done is tell kids who are already getting into trouble, there's no there there. There's nothing you really need to worry about. There really aren't consequences. And this has even led to kids who have guns at school being diverted, meaning they won't be charged with a felony for bringing a gun to school. Interesting that the people who are responsible for these reforms are the people who say they're anti-gun violence. But we have just pathetically lenient penalties for juveniles who carry guns, which, of course, is illegal if you're not being supervised by an adult. Anyway, let us lighten the mood a little bit here. Saturday Night Live began its 50th season. Lorne Michaels still at the helm of Saturday Night Live. And, of course, they had to have a lot of fun at the expense of the people running for president. And so part of the skit had Joe Biden portrayed by Dana Carvey, who has, again, portrayed George H.W. Bush in the 80s and Ross Perot in the 90s. Remember that guy? And now returns more than 30 years later to portray Joe Biden. Kamala Harris is being played spot on by Maya Rudolph, who actually resembles her. Anyway, here is Kamala Harris at the podium, again, played by Maya Rudolph.
Listen up, everyone. We couldn't have gotten here without one man, and his name is Joe Biden. Get on out here, Joe Biden.
Dana Carvey kind of slowly making his way over to the podium.
Folks, that's right. A lot of people forget I'm president, including me. But guess what? And by the way, I think I did a pretty good job. I passed more bills than any president in history. But folks, we still got work to do, no joke. I'm being serious right now. Come on. And guess what? And by the way, the fact of the matter is,
the rich don't pay their fair share.
They gotta pay a fair share. We gotta build back better. The build back the better part, the better. Build back the better. Can't believe it's not butter.
Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I just wanna say, say thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you for putting country first and for handing over the reins.
I didn't want to. They made me. And guess what? And by the way, the fact of the matter is, no joke, this is serious right now. This is serious. Anyway, in conclusion, me and Vice President Harris are the same.
Oh, okay, ha ha, great stuff. Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much.
Get him off the stage. He's reminding people that I'm in his administration.
And guess what? And by the way, the matter is, no joke.
When they want to be funny, they can be funny at Saturday Night Live. When they want to be funny, they can be funny. All right. Lines are open for you if you are from the southeastern United States and you have some familiarity with the areas that are being devastated. If you would like to either talk or text your comments, we would love to receive them. And number is the same for both calling us or texting us, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. All right. Jimmy Carter turns 100 years of age today. He's the first president to make it to 100. I think Herbert Hoover was the first to make it to 90. And then Ronald Reagan made it to 91 or 92. Gerald Ford, I think, was 93, 94. I mean, if you're president of the United States, you're probably going to live a little while. you're going to. Jimmy Carter has been in hospice care for a year. Still there. And still with us. And my impression of Jimmy Carter, I believe, you know, of course, Jimmy Carter had a failed presidency. And he lost 44 states, landslide election to Ronald Reagan. It's in part because Jimmy Carter was moderately liberal. And he didn't get along with the left wing of his party. In fact, he was challenged for renomination by Ted Kennedy, who said they're not doing enough to raise social spending. And the economy was absolutely in the tank, and the Soviets were emboldened. They did not perceive Carter as being a very strong president. They invaded Afghanistan. They encroached on several other areas throughout the Third World, including Nicaragua in Central America. Anyway, if you want to remember the good about Jimmy Carter, besides the fact that he paved the way for the epic two terms of Ronald Reagan. How should he be remembered? I think he did three things that were very important. Number one is, we're talking about the Middle East, the Camp David Accords. Israel and Egypt, ever since they had gone to war in 1973, were working out an arrangement, an agreement where Egypt would recognize Israel's right to exist, would recognize its government. They needed someone to write a check and also someone to be the so-called mediator in public to what had already been going on behind the scenes. That was Jimmy Carter, the Camp David Accords. And believe it or not, those accords have held up for over 45 years. They have held up. So he deserves credit for that and has received some credit. The second thing he deserves credit for was Paul Volcker. You guys remember the name Paul Volcker?
I do. Federal Reserve guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When inflation was raging out of control, the Federal Reserve chairman, Arthur Burns, who was not very successful at his job, and then G. William Miller, who was not successful as his successor, Jimmy Carter decided to appoint Paul Volcker, who was a very respected banker and a very respected name on Wall Street, but he made it clear that we had to wring inflation out of the economy. And that would mean some short-term pain. To his everlasting credit, Jimmy Carter appointed him. And by the way, Ronald Reagan reappointed him. And things did get, in the short term, worse for the economy before it got better. That was a case of Jimmy Carter putting country over career. And the third thing he did that he really deserves much more credit for, we think of Ronald, the 80s was an era of deregulation and getting the federal government, you know, off the backs of people and quit micromanaging everything. Reagan gets a lot of the credit, but Jimmy Carter actually started it. It was Jimmy Carter who deregulated the airlines, and the cost of flying declined by half. Moving goods logistically moved down 50%, in part because Jimmy Carter deregulated trucking. And even as he signed a windfall profits tax on the energy industry, he also began oil price deregulation. And then he deregulated natural gas. This happened during, a lot of people think that happened during Reagan because that's when we began to see the benefits of deregulation. A lot of that actually happened with Carter. So the focus began to move, you know, instead of focusing on the shortcomings of the market, we actually, for a time there, were focused on the shortcomings of government regulation, on excessive regulation not producing the results people expected. And so this wonderful trend to getting government out of the economy and letting the market, you know, letting the market function, letting the market fly, that actually did begin under Carter, which I think we need to remember as Jimmy Carter turns 100. So happy birthday, President James Earl Carter, the only president to hit 100 years of age. He did that today. Social media sweep. What's going on right now, Phil?
A big trending item and a news story that's in all the national newscasts is this dock worker strike along the East Coast and the Gulf Coast in Mexico. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. One of the things that caught my attention about this, I think it's 44,000, 45,000 dock workers, longshore workers that
it's
are
a
on
big
strike.
Deal.
And yeah. Some of the video I've been seeing, and I've noticed this on social media, people are posting pictures with the union slogan as they're on the picket line that says, "Machines don't feed families. Support ILA workers," International Longshore Association union workers.
Well, what about,
feed families.
What about people who build machines?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
What about people who maintain and repair machines?
And this is the danger of overpricing your labor. And certainly the union is has the latitude to ask for the labor and wage that they want, but if it gets too high, yes, automated machines will replace your labor if you price yourself out of the labor market. So I just think that's a really unfortunate way to walk the strike line with a sign that says machines don't feed families.
Well,
and I think it shows the kind of lack of economic understanding for a contract labor request like that.
You know, it's also technology. If technology helps you move large amounts of freight,
yep,
with a machine, I mean, look at the machines that we have now. Should we have said 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we shouldn't be going there. We shouldn't be using those machines.
I mean, what we're talking about is a machine that does it automatically without a human operator.
Automation.
Yeah, boom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, an assembly line does require some technology. So that's what they're opposed to. But on the other hand, you know, boy, these guys do well. I mean, when
overall,
I was a kid growing up in West Seattle,
mm-hmm.
everyone, you know, can you get a job on the docks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does anyone know someone who can get me a union card?
Kids I grew up with, and, you know, right after we were out of high school, similar stuff.
And some of my friends did get jobs down there. They retired early. They were making incredibly good money.
Yeah.
And enjoying those benefits.
And I suspect this dock worker strike will come up in the vice presidential debate tonight, along with what you've been talking about with the hurricane flash flooding damage and destruction in between the Carolinas and Tennessee. And what about the expectations for the vice presidential candidate, Tim Walz? Lars Larson on the phone a little bit earlier, off the air before he went on with you. He was talking about how there's already an effort to try and lower expectations for Tim Walz. Listen to this assessment of Tim Walz by one of the CNN panelists that you've seen a lot from lately, Scott Jennings. He's kind of the Republican panelist on CNN talk shows. Here's what he has to say about Tim Walz and the debate possibilities.
Walz is a buffoon. I'm sorry. This guy, he's the only school teacher in America who brags that none of his students can get into an Ivy League school. He's had one consequential press interaction with our Dana Bash, who asked him about the fabrications in his own resume, and his answer was essentially, you know, me no understand words good. I mean, he's a buffoon.
So we'll see how Tim Walz holds up in the debate tonight against J.D. Vance.
He just makes stuff up. Like, you know, he said that he was overseas.
He does have a propensity for that. Yeah.
During Tiananmen Square.
Mm.
No, he wasn't. He was in Nebraska.
Uh-huh. And then one more note about the hurricane destruction and damage. I'm looking at a post from a storm chaser, and I'm not sure if this post comes from Asheville, North Carolina, so I guess that's where the storm chaser ended up.
Okay.
And he writes, Waffle House restaurant is open. They have hooked us up and are going to help feed an entire shelter this evening in Asheville, North Carolina. So Waffle House responding in that respect. And a lot of people are pointing to this example saying, look at Waffle House is faster to react to hurricane relief and the flash flooding relief in that area of Western Carolina than the federal government is.
Yep. Yep. No, fair point. When we come back on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, three whistleblowers from the Department of Homeland Security talk about a law, a really important law that they are duty bound to follow at DHS, and they are not. Wait until you find out what it is right around the corner as The Commute continues.
Halloween's a Thursday this year. Mm. Some people have had their house and yard decorated since Memorial Day weekend, John. I'm not kidding.
Talk about a holiday that has spawned a huge industry.
Well, it's just big kids. We like to really get creative with all the tools of the trade that now are found in stores, mechanic robots and such.
Almost every other vacant business storefront is now a Halloween storefront.
There you go.
You know, for 60 days. Anyway, today is the first day of October. The Commute with Carlson. A story that I'm so glad we have a chance to bring you. You should be hearing this from others as well. Sadly, I don't think you will be, which is one reason this show is indispensable. When someone enters the country illegally and they are detained, they used to be either fingerprinted or a DNA sample and then sent back across the border. Well, all too often, as you know, people who are detained are supposed to be either fingerprinted or have their DNA taken, and they're released into the country. That is what the law requires, regardless of whether they're sent back home or sent into the interior of the country. The law requires that a DNA fingerprint, so to speak, be collected. Again, that is a requirement in federal law. And we're not talking about a relic from, passed in the 1800s. This is a law that was passed in 2005, bipartisan. Well, three whistleblowers spoke with journalist Catherine Herridge and said, they're not doing that anymore. This is unbelievable stuff. Here, have a listen.
This law is on the books.
Yes.
Is Homeland Security enforcing the DNA collection law?
Not fully.
As a result, are Americans less safe?
Yes.
No question in your mind?
None.
Our team sat down with three government whistleblowers with 7 decades of law enforcement experience. They work at Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, a division of Homeland Security.
This internal government memo confirms that you were retaliated against because you spoke out against officials at Homeland Security who you believed were violating the law.
Yes. 100%.
The agency's intentional decade-long failure to implement a law designed to protect public safety. That's its conclusion. Customs and Border Protection is in violation of the federal law, and it's done knowingly.
Yes.
This internal Homeland Security directive, marked law enforcement sensitive, lays out the law. The border agency is required to collect DNA samples from non-United States persons in detention for immigration violations. Known as the DNA Fingerprint Act, it passed in 2005 with bipartisan support.
So there's no ambiguity. The language is clear.
It lays it out as a roadmap.
Have you ever seen a directive like this be ignored?
Never.
No.
Okay, a lot of people are going to be confused. Homeland Security's job is to uphold the law and to keep Americans safe. But what you're alleging is that Homeland Security is not complying with the law.
That's correct.
Since 2021, under the Biden-Harris administration, Homeland Security's own data reports more than 10 million border encounters.
10 million. And they're not even keeping track of them anymore. They're not even seeing to it that they are fingerprinted, that their DNA is collected. And then we come to find out, according to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that on Kamala Harris's watch, after all, she was appointed border czar by Joe Biden, not just to get into the root causes of illegal immigration, and we know the root causes. The root causes were opening the gate, period. That's the root cause. But also, she was charged with stemming the flow of illegal entry into the country. Those were Joe Biden's words. So the media who are running interference for her on this, saying, oh, she wasn't really border czar. Yeah, she was. And in fact, she is. She's supposed to be doing this. On her watch, 425,000 illegals who are convicted criminals and an additional 222,000 with pending criminal charges have been released into the interior of the United States. Some of these crimes are serious. We got 13,000 murderers. 13,000 murderers are illegally in this country and have been released into this country. nearly 16,000 rapists, those convicted of sexual assault, have been released into the interior of this country. 62,000 people, overwhelmingly men, of course, in all these cases, convicted of assault, have been released into this country. And there's an additional 1,800 with pending homicide charges, an additional 4,200 people with pending sexual assault charges, an additional 42,000 with pending assault charges. There are currently more than 7 million illegals on the docket, which includes illegals who have final orders for removal, but they're not detained, so they have to show up voluntarily. These three whistleblowers are very courageous. And again, when the government is duty-bound to follow a law and they ignore following the law, why aren't people being charged with crimes? Why aren't they being charged with criminal neglect? If you ignore the law, a federal law, like, say, paying your taxes, you're going to be facing criminal charges. Or at least you could be facing criminal charges. Instead, Department of Homeland Security was willfully, deliberately, according to these three whistleblowers with 70 years of law enforcement experience on the border, are insisting that the requirement to collect DNA samples from illegals in detention are not being collected. Again, I don't know why you can do that and not be facing legal consequences. If you don't like a law, then you countermand it with another statute that either improves it or amends it or strikes it down. You don't just ignore it. And yet, this is what is happening. It is coming up here on 46 minutes after 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Still to come on the commute, a growing number of bosses are less and less reluctant to fire Gen Z college grads who come to work for them. They tell you why, coming up on the John Carlson Show. Also, Pete Rose, maybe the best hitter in the last 50 or 60 years of baseball, died at the age of 83, never made the Hall of Fame. You know why? His credentials were sterling. They were impeccable. But he transgressed, and we'll remind you of that while we're also remembering how phenomenal a player he was in his 24 years in Major League Baseball. It is 47 minutes. Boeing time on the John Carlson Show. 7:47. Good morning. VI. Still to come on the John Carlson Show, Pete Rose. You know, I got email the other day from a listener saying, man, you talk so much about sports. I said, well, okay, come football season, yeah, we usually crank it up a little bit because people start talking about, you know, Seahawks and Huskies and Cougars. But most of the time when we talk sports, it's because there's a cultural angle as well.
Yeah, major news story.
When we talked
maybe
about Caitlin Clark, it was because of all of the abuse that was heaped her way, because she didn't fit the narrative of a WNBA player. And instead, she silenced the critics with her basketball play. Pete Rose passing away, that's worth, you know, a couple of sentences, except his life became a larger drama because of some missteps.
The gambling allegations and investigation.
Yeah, which we'll get into. Here's a listener email from Greg in Everett. Says, in the vice presidential debate tonight between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz, all J.D. Vance has to do is remind people when Kamala Harris says that Trump killed the border bill, is that Biden-Harris had 3 years in power, including 2 years control of the House and Senate, and did nothing on the border. They had a chance to bring up that bill that they finally brought up in the fourth year of their presidency when Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were both in the majority. And they did nothing. So don't blame Trump. I wouldn't say, Greg and Everett, I wouldn't say they did nothing. They actually made things worse. Dramatically worse. And when I say dramatically worse, I mean they made things historically worse. The conservative estimate is that 10 million people illegally entered and were allowed to stay in the United States. 10 million. Another million or so were granted, quote, parole and allowed to remain in this country. That's disgraceful. And again, they got there by deliberately changing all of the policies enacted during the Trump administration to close the border, secure the border, and to send people back across the border when they tried to come here illegally. All those things were reversed, not to mention the wall, construction on the wall stopped. So that is what you need to point out. Not just that they did nothing, but they aggressively went in the opposite direction to worsen a problem, and America is paying dearly for it. And, you know, as for Donald Trump killing that bill, when they said, oh, we finally are cracking down on the border, that bill would have allowed 5,000 people a day to enter the United States illegally. That bill would have set up a tolerance policy on illegal immigration. Damned right Trump was correct to oppose it. And I'm glad it failed. Hour number three of The Commute, right around the corner. A gorgeous autumn morning here. First day of October. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. Man, we've had a good, lively show going this morning. Let's keep it going. You know, a few years ago, there were all sorts of articles about how young people, young Gen Z people, were graduating from college and were changing the workplace. They were demanding a better work-life balance. That they weren't slaves to their desks. That they believed that work could be overstressed. And that companies, if they want to keep them, if they wanted them to come work for you, had better learn to make adjustments. Those were the kind of articles we were used to seeing in 2021, 22, 23, all that. Well, now it's 2024. And this headline in the financial pages of Yahoo.com says it all. Bosses are firing Gen Z grads just months after hiring them. Here's what they say needs to change. So I guess employers not quite as enamored with the lifestyles and the values of 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds who come work for them. Anyway, here we go. Quote, after complaining that Gen Z grads are difficult to work with for the better part of 2 years, bosses are no longer all talk, no action. Now, they're rapidly firing young workers who aren't up to scratch just months after hiring them out of college. According to a new report, 6 in 10 employers say they've already sacked some of the Gen Z workers they hired fresh out of college earlier this year. Intelligent.com, that is a platform dedicated to helping young professionals navigate the future of work, surveyed nearly 1,000 U.S. business leaders. It found that the class of 2024's shortcomings will impact future grads. After experiencing a raft of problems with new hires, 1 in 6 bosses say they're hesitant to hire young college grads again. Meanwhile, 1 in 7 bosses admit they may avoid hiring them altogether next year. 3/4 of the companies that were surveyed said some or all of their recent college grad hires were unsatisfactory in some way. Employers' gripe with young people today is their lack of motivation or initiative. 50% of the leaders that were surveyed cited that as the reason why things didn't work out with their new hires. Bosses also pointed to Gen Z workers often being unprofessional, unorganized, and having poor communication skills as their top reasons for having to sack them. By the way, if you are an employer, or frankly, if you're Gen Z, and you want to respond to this, you can give us a call. Phones are already ringing, by the way. Or you can text us at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Business leaders say that they have struggled with Generation Z's tangible challenges, including often being late to work and meetings, not wearing office-appropriate clothing, and using inappropriate language in the workplace. More than half of hiring managers have come to the conclusion that college grads are, for the most part, unprepared for the world of work. Over 20% say they can't handle the workload. Some colleges are aware that students are wholly unprepared for the workplace and have started stepping up to fill the gap. Michigan State University, for instance, in Lansing, Michigan, is teaching students how to handle a networking conversation. How to look for signs that the other party is starting to get bored and that it's time to move on. When asked what would make college grads more hireable, bosses responded, A, positive attitude, and B, more initiative. Okay, so basically what they're saying is, we want people to work for a company who want to be here. We want to hire people who want to be here, and we want to know that they want to help the company, just not wait and see what the company can do for them. If you think about it, that's pretty much what an employer would have said, not in 2024, but also in 1924. We want to hire people who want to help our company, and we want to hire people who've got a work ethic. People who are willing to show that they want to be here. That hasn't changed. That's been the same thing for a century. Only today, Gen Z, and I don't want to stereotype, but again, I'm going off of what business leaders are saying. They're saying that they just see more of a lackadaisical attitude. And what are you going to do for me when, if you want to go work for a company, it is exactly the opposite. What are you going to do for them? The chief education and career development advisor for Intelligent.com, his name is Hui Nguyen, advises recent college grads to observe how other workers interact to understand the company culture at the new firm they may join. From there, it's easier to gauge what's an appropriate way of engaging with others. Quote, take the initiative to ask thoughtful questions. Seek feedback. Apply it to show your motivation for personal growth. Build a reputation, etc., for dependability by maintaining a positive attitude. Again, if you think about it, though, these are things that my parents and others were telling me when I was a teenager going to work. These are things that we were being taught as teenagers who were entering the workforce, getting part-time jobs. Why is this something you've got to address as a major issue with a legal adult going to work for an advertising agency or an architecture firm or a high-tech company or a construction company? I mean, you know what this is? This isn't about, you know, have they developed the following, skill set. This is just about personal maturity. The CEO of Amazon, Andy Jassy, recently echoed that an embarrassing amount of your success in your 20s simply depends on your attitude. And the reason why is kind of simple. Managers, he said, would rather work with positive people. Is this embarrassingly simple stuff? You really need to teach this to a 20-something with a college degree? Richard Branson, the billionaire founder of Virgin, has repeatedly urged young people to just ditch university education, period, and start learning from the school of life.
We called it Hard Knocks.
Mark Zuckerberg said recently that raw talent and personality are more important than credentials. Well, of course, that's always been the case. The top executive for Cisco in Great Britain, David Meads, dropped out of school at 16. He told Fortune magazine that attitude and aptitude are more important than whatever letters you have after your name or whatever qualifications you've got on a sheet.
Looking at you, Jill Biden, PhD.
Phil.
And where did she get her PhD?
Dr. Biden, right?
Yeah. Yes, Dr.
Dr. Biden, PhD.
Dr. Biden get her PhD?
I don't know.
From the Joe Biden School of Public Affairs at the University of Delaware.
Oh, okay.
So, John, you're sharing all this
nepotism.
Generation Z, and I keep looking out the studio booth looking at young Zach, Generation Z, higher age. So did we just luck out with a guy that came here for an internship who was totally studying something else, nothing to broadcasting, and now give you a little feedback, he's been here about a year, year and a half.
He came here as a part-time worker. He started off in promotions, working part-time while he was still at UW.
And now he's like this executive producer, go-to for us. What did he do at the Democratic and National Convention for us?
Everything. Right.
And started, like you said, Phil, as an intern, and all of a sudden he's here doing this radio thing. And I've predicted, and I've done pretty good at this, everybody, in my 45 years of radio. I told him, you stay with it. This is going to be a top executive of a broadcast company one day, if not ownership, just because he's got the positive attitude, John. He's been to school, but he knows the basics of be nice, dress up, show to work on time.
Yeah.
Do the overtime. I mean, I was gone on vacation. Tell me Zach didn't come in here and have to do a couple of shifts. And I don't even know what the schedule was.
He was here last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See? So
Zach, we are talking about this report just out. Yahoo Finance was writing about it, that bosses, instead of being enamored and being charmed by the different values that Gen Z employees were bringing to the office, with a demanding a better work-life balance and being able to express themselves on whatever, you know, happens to cross their mind, and bringing politics into the office, they're saying, you know what? No thanks. They are rapidly firing young workers months after hiring them. They said a lot of them, they just don't have good attitudes. They want to know what the company is going to do for them instead of the other way around. That they don't seem to have much motivation or show much initiative, et cetera, et cetera. And so as our minted and credentialed Gen Z representative in the building.
You'd like to let me go on air.
No, we're firing you for not showing more initiative around here. No, yes. We'd like to get your on-air take.
Oh, well, I mean, it seems to me that if you're a Gen Z or if you just show up, it goes a lot longer ways than it should. There's a lot more opportunities than I think a lot of young people deserve just because they showed up. The pool of viable employees is awfully small in the younger generation, it seems.
But a lot of the things that they're talking about in this article is show motivation, show a positive attitude.
Just come into the office.
Be nice, be on time. Right. I mean, these are not things you should have to teach a 20-something.
The amount of my friends who will turn down a job or seek a job that is work from home as opposed to go into the office, that seems to be one of the biggest things that Gen Z workers are not interested in doing. They would like to be home with a dog, on the couch, doing whatever sort of job allows them to do that, as opposed to just show up to an office.
Well, one high-tech company that I won't mention has a wonderful policy. The policy is, well, if you wish to work from home 3 days a week, wish to work from home part of the time, you can do that. But promotions will be handed out to people who are in the office all week long. So if you want to work here and you want to work remotely, okay. But when it comes to promoting people, we look for people who want to be around other employees, who want to be around the company, who want to be around and be part of the company.
Well, yeah, how could you possibly learn to do any other job if you're not here? If I didn't get to come watch Mark work the board and have Mark show me how to do stuff when I first started, how would I have made it to be able to fill in when he's gone?
Very, and of course, you're working under the master there, the radio legend, Mark Christopher. Yes. Anyway, very good, young Zach, getting your take on this. And I've talked to no shortage of employers who said the same thing. What I love is how the media used to celebrate how these challenges that the challenging new values being brought into the workplace by Gen Z has now 3 years later guttered out into, look, you show a better attitude, show up on time, learn how to dress, or get the hell out.
Well, one thing I don't see anymore, too, John, real quick,
we'll see you later.
Ever since the pandemic, how many times we used to always be invited to go to colleges, universities, trade schools, and talk about broadcasting, radio, just to give them firsthand knowledge of, like, okay, away from the textbook, here we go, I'm going to show you what's going on, and tell you straight from the studios of, like, KVI. We just don't get those requests anymore, and I'm sure that's, like, some of these high schools used to have career day, representatives from Boeing, Seattle Fire Department, Washington State Ferries, or whatever. You just don't see that anymore.
Well, you see it a little bit, but you're right. Not as much as before, definitely. Definitely. All right, 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Philip J. standing by patiently with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists on the John Carlson. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, go for it. What's happening? Social media from socialists.
I've got two gems. I hope they're gems anyway. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. First one starts off with a response to Andrea Suarez, who's running for state legislature. She's the executive director of We Heart Seattle that has done a lot of outreach to try and help get people who are homeless off the streets and into services without running them through the King County bureaucracy of the King County Regional Housing, Homelessness, rather, Administration. And Andrea Suarez posted on her elect Andrea Suarez account, "Your tax dollars at work enabling drug addiction by handing out foil and pipes to smoke lethal illicit drugs." And she's got a short video where she pulls out this little pack that King County Public Health seems to be giving out as part of its harm reduction policy. So she posts this. She criticizes the harm reduction part of it. And now all kinds of people who are pro-harm reduction are retweeting that. And I'll give you one example from somebody named Andrew Engelson that retweeted it. Andrew Engelson's profile says, "Seattle-based freelance journalist and editor, Rainbow Pride Flag." And Engelson says, "Safe consumption supplies prevent disease and at the sites that make them available encourage drug users to engage with services and offer opportunities to seek treatment when they're ready." Okay, sure.
That's why ever since they started doing this, drug use has gone way down in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. And that's what they say. Oh, it gives you a chance to interdict them and then get them into treatment. But unfortunately, nobody's going to treatment based on this harm reduction plan. But again, in a city that bans cigarette smoking within 25 feet of building doors and then banned trans fats for French fries and donuts and added a sugar tax to discourage drinking sugared soda because they wanted to improve people's health, these are the same folks who are cool with providing fentanyl smoking materials to drug addicts. Would you please pick a lane? You're confusing me with your hypocrisy. Now, there's that one. Here's one more from the Divest SPD. This would be one of the social media handles that has been anti-police.
Well, they still want to defund the police.
Right, exactly.
Defund the remaining police.
And Divest SPD posted, "You can always tell who hasn't seriously thought about the criminal legal system because they think it's this frictionless magical punishment box. They've never witnessed $100,000 worth of resources used to prosecute someone for stealing $50 worth of stuff." And you know what? I think that's a great point. the city of Seattle has a $7 billion budget. So I'm not paying any more $50 parking tickets that I get in Seattle. And the state of Washington has a $70 billion a year state budget. So I'm not paying any more $150 speeding tickets I get if I'm out on the freeway doing 90 on I-90. I love this guy's logic.
So if you don't prosecute people for stealing $50 worth of stuff, or as in your example, getting $150, then I guess it's no longer illegal. If you don't prosecute someone and there's no consequences, then why not do it? We were talking about people who still want to work remotely. Here is what the view looks like in Seattle. Seattle had a 20% reduction in people who worked remotely, meaning from home, last year. And yet, still, after a 20% decline, remote workers still, in 2023, this is data for last year, remote workers still made up over 28.5% of the working people who live in Seattle. That's 466,000 people. In 2019, pre-pandemic, 8%, not 28%, 8% of Seattle residents in the workforce worked remotely. All right. By the way, how has that affected transportation, how people get around? Transit use is still way down from 2019. In 2023, about 66,000 people use transit of all types. In 2019, it wasn't 66,000. It was 116,000. So it's about 45% drop from 2019. Driving, they break it up into two categories. There's driving alone, and then there's driving with someone else. About 208,000 people drove to work, which is a steady increase. Walking has picked up. But even now, it gives you an idea of how people were getting to work before they were working remotely. There were about 50,000 people who walked to work in 2019. Now that's down to about 40,000. So that's a 20% reduction. Bicycling is so overrated. In 2019, about 17,000 people rode a bicycle to work, which was less than it was in 2016. But in 2023, it was down from 17,000 to 13,000. So people who ride a bike to work, people who walk to work, big reduction. As for driving, like I said, carpooling is not far at all from where it was. Is 31,000 people carpooled in 2019, 28,000 carpooled in 2023. People are driving, but not nearly as many people are taking transit. Just a huge, huge dip. And ditto bicycling and even walking to work. It's 42 minutes after 8 o'clock on the morning commute. Pete Rose I had his baseball card when I was a kid growing up. And, you know, it's amazing the things that you remember when you were a kid. For some reason, I remember I was in the Geo Guy drugstore in West Seattle Junction.
Oh, my gosh. What a store.
This is about, I'm guessing, 1967 or 1968. And, of course, I was always checking out the sports magazines at the magazine rack. And there was a story with a headline, "Will Pete Rose become baseball's first $100,000 a year singles hitter?" Meaning, will Pete Rose finally, you know, make a six-figure salary?
Player contracts and all that.
$100,000. The answer is he was, and much more than that. He started with the Cincinnati Reds back in 63, spent his first 16 seasons with the Cincinnati Reds. That was when the Cincinnati Reds were riding high. That was the big red machine of the mid-70s.
Early 70s, yeah.
He was part of that.
Joe Morgan, Tommy Seaver, Johnny Bench, that crew.
Yep.
Cesar Geronimo.
That's right, yeah. Yes.
George Foster.
Marked the first championship for the Cincinnati Reds in 35 years back then. And then he went off to the Philadelphia Phillies for 5 years, won a third World Series ring in 1980, and then wrapping things up, spent half a season with the Montreal Expos and returned to the Cincinnati Reds to wrap up his playing career. What a career. Finished with 4,256 hits. The most in Major League Baseball history. Only Ty Cobb passed the 4,000 hit mark. Rose also holds Major League Baseball records for games played. 3,562 baseball games played. He was at bat over 14,000 times. He won three batting titles, a couple of Gold Glove Awards, and 17 trips to the All-Star Game. He was the league's MVP in 1973 when he batted .338, had 230 hits. He also spent seven seasons as the Cincinnati Reds manager, including his final few seasons when he was still playing. He actually won a couple of division titles while being player manager, finished with a winning record. So why isn't this guy in the Hall of Fame? Well, again, if you were around during the 80s and 90s, you know all about it. Pete Rose had a gambling problem. And he gambled on baseball games. Again, it's one thing to gamble on other sports. Major League Baseball doesn't like that either. But gambling on baseball while you're playing baseball, not good. gambling on your own team's games when you're the manager of the team, really not good. Pete Rose was banned for life from then baseball commissioner Bart Giamatti. By the way, his son, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, fine actor, right? And a lot of the gambling investigation revolved around the Black Sox scandal from the 1919-something season, and that they didn't want to have a repeat of that scandal, and that's why the commissioner came down so hard on Pete Rose.
He had long denied the allegations, but then wrote a book and admitted it. People forget this. He also was convicted of tax evasion and actually did several months behind bars.
And I think that revolved around the signature circuit where fans pay a 50 or 100 or whatever to sign a ball or a jersey, and that didn't all get reported accurately or something to that effect.
So they still go back and forth about whether he should have received a lifetime ban, whether they should give him a break. Interestingly, his old teammate Johnny Bench said, nope, nope. He tarnished the game of baseball by gambling like that. As for Pete Rose himself, he says, there's only one thing I would change if I had to live it all over again. I would obviously turn my life around and not bet on baseball. He said, having said that, I feel like I've been a pretty good citizen. You never read about me being in a bar after hours or beating up my wife or getting into a fight with a fan. I was as gracious to everyone as I could be. Well, very much a flawed person, but also very much an outstanding baseball player. Became famous because whenever he would walk, he would run to first base. It was just his signature move for his entire career. It is BP debate tonight, 6 p.m. CBS is hosting. Other stations are running it. But 6 p.m. tonight, a 90-minute debate. You do not want to miss it. If you did miss Saturday Night Live last Saturday, they started their 50th year, 50th season of SNL. Anyway, Dana Carvey, who once portrayed President George H.W. Bush, is now portraying, 35 years later, Joe Biden, along with Maya Rudolph playing Kamala Harris. This was Saturday night with Kamala Harris at the podium.
Listen up, everyone. We couldn't have gotten here without one man, and his name is Joe Biden. Get on out here, Joe Biden.
Kind of ambles on over to the podium.
Folks, that's right. A lot of people will forget I'm president, including me. But guess what? And by the way, I think I did a pretty good job. I passed more bills than any president in history. But folks, we still got work to do, no joke. I'm being serious right now, come on. And guess what? And by the way, the fact of the matter is,
the rich don't pay their fair share.
They gotta pay their fair share. We gotta build back better. The build back the better the bar the better. Build back the better. Can't believe it's not butter.
Thank you, Jabari. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I just want to say thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you for putting country first and for handing over the reins.
I didn't want to. They made me. And guess what? And by the way, the fact of the matter is, no joke, this is serious right now. I mean, it's serious. Anyway, in conclusion, me and Vice President Harris are the same.
Oh, okay. Ha ha. Great stuff. Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much.
Oh, that was good. They can be funny when they want to at SNL. All right. That's all the time we have for now. Let's talk again tomorrow. That debate is tonight, 6 p.m. CBS and other stations as well. We'll talk about it tomorrow.